This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Today, we're talking about artificial intelligence or AI. Can it improve the diagnosis of diseases? If you can imagine a future where a computer is able to diagnose cancer better than a team of doctors, for instance. So that is supposed to be the promise of AI, that it would render human intelligence obsolete one day. But perhaps that's a little bit too ambitious. Perhaps that's more hype than reality. So I want to find out more today from Professor Dr. Ng Kwan Hong, medical physicist and professor at the Department of Biomedical Imaging at University of Malaya, and Dr. Evelyn Ho, consultant clinical radiologist. So we're going to bring both their perspectives together to separate the aspirational aspects of AI from the practical when it comes to improving the diagnosis and imaging of diseases. How are the both of you today?
I'm very good. Thank you for having us on.
Fine. Thank you, Xiaoyik.
Thank you so much for joining me. And Prof. Ng, I just want to congratulate you first on having received the Merdeka Award for 2020, or one of the recipients for the Merdeka Award 2020. How do you feel about this recognition?
It's very excited about that, and also it's a humbling experience. I look forward to contribute more to our nation and to inspire more young people to do good.
Prof. Ng, you were recognized, a big part of it is for your work in biomedical imaging. Can you actually help us to understand what is this term, biomedical imaging?
Well, this term means using, for example, X-ray or ultrasound or magnetic field to look inside a human body. So it's called imaging. For example, we have heard of CT scan. So we use X-ray to pass through the body to look into the cross sections, and we can reconstruct two dimensions. So this helps us to detect early cancer or any abnormality in the body. So it's a very wide discipline.
So all the technologies that medicine uses to be able to look into the body. And, that's exactly what Dr. Evelyn Ho's specialty is as well in the clinical setting. We're talking about technology today, and I think artificial intelligence is that futuristic technology that we all talked about decades ago, but it is a reality now. I just want to give you an idea of what AI promises. I read at the beginning of 2020 a paper published in the journal Nature about AI that was developed by Google that would potentially help doctors to identify breast cancer. So this model, what it did was it scanned mammograms, and it was able to reduce the number of false negatives by 9.4%, which the researchers said performs better than an individual radiologist in both the UK and the US. Now, very big claims here. And before we try to understand what these kinds of results mean, I'd like to go back few steps and get a bit of a 101 on artificial intelligence. So perhaps, Prof. Ng, you could help us to understand what is AI in the context of medicine?
First, to go back to AI, is a discipline under computer science. This is quite old, actually. It's about 60, 70 years old. We have heard of robotics, computer vision, natural language processing, expert system. So these are the various aspects or various features of artificial intelligence. However, 60 years ago, technology, computing power wasn't that powerful as we are today. So a bit slow. It undergone so-called winters, nothing happened, and then came up again, another winter. And now, about 10 years ago, it's blooming. And we now hear of things like machine learning, deep learning, and lots of hypes about that. It has matured quite a lot. However, it is still not there yet.
Okay. Dr. Evelyn, these terms, machine learning, deep learning, I mean, again, if we can bring it to medicine, to the care of people with diseases or to be able to improve the care, how does AI help medicine in these aspects?
Firstly, I think we have to put the perspective of artificial intelligence, onto what the layman understands. So artificial intelligence is this so-called new name. It's exactly like Prof. Ng said, we have had all these things going on for eons. And in fact, 10 years in the medical line development is considered short and new. So AI is not new. We've had computer-aided detection, which we did not like, which resulted in more extra work for us that did not increase efficiency and in fact reduce productivity and was not accurate enough to be of any use. And most of us did not find it useful and didn't use it. In addition, artificial intelligence is used, and they use the word intelligence, is to try to simulate what the human being thinks in the brain. So in other words, they use this to make it sound really sexy. I've got to say, if you say this is data science, which artificial intelligence is a subset of data science, then it sounds boring. Data analytics all sounds boring. And artificial intelligence encompasses machine learning, and machine learning encompasses deep learning. And in deep learning, you will hear buzzwords like neural network, you know, algorithms such as that. What's it trying to do? It's trying to simulate the way the brain computes so many things rapidly. And it is something which they have been trying to do for a long time. And indeed, it is because of the computing power. So when Google, or in fact, for more than 10 years, my friends have WhatsApp, you know, has emailed me or told me, hey, you're going to be out of a job. You know, I just went for a conference. And they have told us that, you know, in a couple of years, they'll be able to get rid of radiologists because they're going to be able to diagnose all these things. And 5 to 10 years have passed, and we know that we are nowhere close to it. We are scratching the surface still in many areas. And to me, all these things about looking at lung cancer, breast cancer, these are the low-lying fruits. Why do I say that? Because especially in screening mammograms, they have this huge data set to study on. And you are assuming that the accuracy of the machine learning depends on human beings, radiologists, labeling it as correctly, cancer versus non-cancer. I'm simplifying it a lot. And if the data sets are labeled properly, then the machine learns. Otherwise, it's ego, garbage in, garbage out. So a lot of these studies, like the one you mentioned, in fact, they have just done one study where out of the three software companies who did the AI, they actually found one that actually could possibly work in clinical scenario. And clinical scenario means people of a variety of size and shape, people who are performed on many different generations of mammogram units, done by people of different levels of expertise in different institutions, and applicable, reliable, and valid throughout. We have not got any that is close enough at the moment. I think that particular study that you mentioned was quite more on a little bit better than what the others have. You know, in a lab, you can simulate everything. It's like COVID-19 in the lab can exist for 28 days, but they forgot to tell you in the reports that it's at 50% humidity at a temperature of, I can't remember what it was, a temperature which was pretty low, and they had no exposure to normal light. It's a darkened room. So these lab conditions do not necessarily translate to bench, which is what we do. And AI can help us in many more ways than just diagnosing accuracy. It can, for example, right now we have got machines of different age groups and different technological levels, but AI can help us make the images better. Maybe AI can help us not need to use contrast media, especially in MRI. Gadolinium is now a question mark because nobody knows exactly what happens to the gadolinium which stays in our body. They don't even know whether it's in the raw element form, in which case it is poisonous, or it is chelated to what it was originally, in which case then it is in inverted commas safe. So if we could use AI to help, and actually people are doing this, but you know what? It's not getting airtime. And that is what's going to get us excited in radiology. I don't need to give contrast. I don't have to worry about that anaphylactic reaction where a patient may die from a contrast reaction. Or I can find that, hey, I can do with lower radiation dose. The images are artificially enhanced and makes it very well diagnosable. So we don't really need to reinvent to get someone to replace us, but we can get much better quality images. And that's where AI is so helpful. And the other area, of course, is workflow. if AI can prioritize for us, you know, you need human beings to do so many things in our computerized systems. I like to say that this computerized system takes so much time away from us keying in data, requesting for patient information, and then making sure that it gets sent out. Then we have to still make a phone call to the clinician. You know, nothing is automated. It is actually a misnomer. Everything is manual. And the and computer systems today are really helping management more than helping clinically. Patients find that we face the computer all the time. We have actually depersonalized radiology, and we have depersonalized medicine overall. And I won't be surprised if, you know, patients now that they can actually see a doctor online, and at least they're looking at each other face to face, rather right. than looking at a doctor looking at the computer keying things in. You know,
okay.
So I'm just giving some perspectives, and I'm sure Pravin has more things to say.
Yeah. You've already, you know, identified quite a number of challenges it's all, like you said, it's all about not what's happening in the lab, but what's happening in real life. And you've already identified some of those issues. I'd like to get Prof. Ng to talk a little bit about that, but we'll go for a quick break first. And when we come back, Prof. Ng, I want to find out more from you. You know, those kinds of issues that Dr. Evelyn was talking about, where are the images really not good enough? How could they be improved? You know, the presence of contrast media and any other challenges when it comes to being able to improve the imaging process. If we can spend a little bit of time talking about that when we come back from the break. I'm speaking to Prof. Ng Kwan Hong, medical physicist and professor at the Department of Biomedical Imaging at University of Malaya, and Dr. Evelyn Ho, consultant clinical radiologist. We're discussing how artificial intelligence can improve medical care. I was going to say just diagnosis of diseases, but I think overall we're talking about the practice of medicine. And really. We'll be right back on Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. Joining me on Zoom today are Prof. Ng Kwan Hong, medical physicist and a professor at the Department of Biomedical Imaging at University of Malaya, as well as Dr. Evelyn Ho, consultant clinical radiologist. We're discussing artificial intelligence today. Sounds so futuristic, but actually it's a reality. A lot of processes can be automated and learned through artificial intelligence. What I want to find out today is really, what does this all mean? We hear so much about things like IBM's Watson. We hear about AI rendering clinicians obsolete. I want to kind of separate the hype from the fact today. Dr. Evelyn earlier talked about how she would like to see AI improving work processes and workflow in the clinical setting. From the perspective of a radiologist, it would be things like making your images better, improving the quality, perhaps not having to use contrast media. Those were the two main things you identified. Prof. Ng, are these major issues in the field of biomedical imaging that need to be addressed?
Yes, indeed. These are still technical problems for us. Now, we use something called image processing or post-processing to improve the images. For example, the patient might move or might be some artifacts in form or just not enough contrast to visualize the tumor. So this image processing is set up computer tools to improve contrast, to remove some of the noise. Most of these are manual or even semi-manual. So the aim of AI is really to automate it. That will free the radiologist the time they just focus on making a diagnosis, an accurate diagnosis based on a good image. So this is where AI comes in. So what they is, they just like human, we learn, well, these are the good images for diagnosis. And so the computer, we train them to learn which are the good one, the features, and which are the so-called lousy ones into improvement. And then automatically they will increase the contrast to make it brighter or to reveal the tumor for the radiologist. And of course, not only for radiologists, the AI is pretty advanced so that with the machine learning, deep learning, they automatically can classify different types of tumor, even different staging as well. Now, it's very similar technology, like we have a lot of smartphone, right? We take a photograph and even under dim light or it's not ideal, somehow a lot of smartphone software can enhance it to make it so good. So we don't really bother about, in the old days, right? We had to set the speed, the aperture. Now we don't bother about that. So this is where AI is. And in fact, in the consumer products, lots of pretty cool applications. And in medicine, we are use a lot of this learning from the commercial products, consumer products, and also those in other science and engineering fields as well.
I also want to follow up with what Dr. Evelyn said about, you know, if we can use AI to replace the use of contrast media, if I understand that correctly, how would that work?
Now, the idea of the contrast media is to enhance the contrast, meaning make the blood vessel stand out so that it can also the tumor with have a lot of blood vessels to stand out, meaning to make it brighter or more contrast. So with this advanced image processing, you can automatically look at the suspicious areas and somehow to enhance it to increase the contrast automatically. So in that way, it sort of eliminate the use of contrast media or using less. Right now, we haven't got the technology perfected yet. We still need this contrast, which is expensive. Also, some patients might have allergy to that. But we, for example, I'm involved in some work in CT scan. We use less contrast medium, about one third less than that. Yet you still can get a very diagnostic quality image so that radiologists are confident to make the diagnosis. So we are slowly making progress. Hopefully one day we can reach a state is contrastless imaging. Hopefully that day will come soon.
So the contrastless is what we want to get to.
Yeah.
And so that we can enhance the contrast. Imaging is all about contrast between different features of your body, different parts of your anatomy, whether it's ultrasound or a CT scan, it's really differentiating one from the other. So this contrast that we talk about actually is right from the simple chest x-ray all the way to MRIs. I would like to go back to the thought about, you know, in tumors. One of the most time-consuming requirements is when we have to compare a CT of many parts of the body to the next CT scan after chemo has been given or treatment of any sort has been given and watch for progress. Even a simple case of radio ablation of some tumor in your liver. And you have to measure, and if it does, like if there are many, then you have to measure it. We find that the measurement by human beings, number one, is not that accurate because we have to apply the calipers and assume that our measurement error is not too great. Number two, we have to be looking at it in the same way so that we pick up the same ones. And if you have 20 or 30 to keep measuring, it is very onerous. So we have got programs, software programs to help to measure even the volume. But more importantly, we want a software program to do all this automatically and pick it up each time a new scan is done. It is able to do it in a more consistent manner. This is where machines are much better than human beings. Human beings get tired at the end of the day. Human beings get distracted by a phone call because they have to answer another doctor and discuss with them. But the machine doesn't. So assuming that the machine does it well, this is where it can take away all this onerous, tedious, boring stuff so that it can help us to get to the right thing. Like, what do we do now with the findings? Is it really better? Is it improved? Or is it this treatment so-called changes? So this is one area where we are dying for AI to come in, and it's not yet there. We have some software, but it's still not there yet. So again, this one doesn't make media news, but it is so important, especially in oncologic imaging. So like I said, things that make a lot of news is news that, you know, seem to say we can diagnose disease or we can get rid of radiologists. Unfortunately, they're not going to get rid of any radiologists. But however, some of my colleagues who are real experts in this area, they say that if we do not harness AI, then we may become obsolete. So all radiologists have to augment radiology by using and harnessing the power of AI. And we are actually looking forward to it. I would say maybe 15 years ago, 10 years ago, I was a little concerned as well, the way the hype was going. But when you look at actually where it is going, you realize that, you know, that's a lot of hype. But I think we are getting there. We are getting there because computing power is so much better. And we have so much grants going up to AI research. And we do have partnerships with all the technology companies. And that is so important so that one day we are getting there to the bench. And we are getting closer, but I won't say we are totally there yet. But I think if we are looking at what we are doing, I think we are already welcoming and waiting. Why is it taking so long?
So we are, you know, if you could put a progress marker on where we are now, what would you say? Are we 70%? Are we 60%?
Oh, this is a tough one. It depends on which areas that you're looking at.
So right. Let's say what you were talking about where...
The tumor sizes?
Yeah, something like that. The kind of technology that would ease the workflow so that you can come in and it minimizes errors up to the point where you as a clinician comes in and you apply your judgment.
Yeah. So the other thing about AI is if we are too dependent on it, is that it can misclassify things. So no matter what, we still have to review it and then come out with the final diagnosis as to what is the plan? What is the treatment plan? Is this really an enlargement? For example, in certain types of treatments of liver cancers, it causes a bigger hole than original, but it is not a progress of the disease. It's a temporary effect because you're burning or cooking it, whichever way you're calling it. You can use radio frequency, you can use ice cryotherapy, right? So if your machine has been taught that if it's bigger means it's progressing, and you don't look at your images at all, and you don't look at the context of what was done, then you may make a mistake, you know, and which if you do not check can cause more harm to the patient. So in medicine, we must not do any harm. So this is where, like I said, we are getting there, but we haven't reached the phase where, you know, we can be very confident about any of these. Right now, if you look at any of the papers, they are saying that we need to apply these across many hospitals, on many different machines in the community setting, where you get scans of varying qualities. So it's better for them to help us be more accurate by boosting up scans which may have been not so good, maybe because the patient moved. It's not always the machine scanner issue or the operator issue, the radiographers or the radiologists. Sometimes the patients can't cooperate. How can AI help us with movement artifacts? How can it correct that? Or can it be so clever that when the patient moves, it readjusts the scan plane? Can we get there? We're not there yet. But we do have software that helps to moderate all these movement, these issues, even in MRI. At this point in time, we do have already some of them. Yeah. So, like I said, it's difficult to tell you where we're getting there, but it's probably not going to be much, much longer. But we are all waiting. But I will try not to hold my breath because, like I said, in medical... in the medical line, it takes quite a while to get anything to the bench. Just a very simple example of contrast enhanced mammograms. I've been listening about it, attended lectures about it for more than 10 years. And it's finally, I think, hit the critical point where people are starting to adopt it, where people are thinking that, hey, this is a good alternative to MRI because there are people who can't do the gadolinium, who can't take the claustrophobia of the MRI. And here is a very fast examination. Yes, it uses radiation, but they have found ways to reduce the radiation dose. So contrast enhanced mammogram is now on the uptake. And it has, of course, arrived in Malaysia some years ago. But again, you know, it's a very slow growth because it takes time for people to believe. They need to read a lot of papers. And it is being used overseas progressively more and more in combination.
Yeah. Prof.
Yeah, I must... caution regarding the ethical use of AI. And this is something that we have no solution at all. Now, many of those AI software, we have reached a state that they are continuously learning. It's just like a brain, we learn. So how do we regulate that? And also, who determines what is the best AI algorithm to use? What is the safest? Also, why should we bother to invest in the AI algorithm? We know that next week, a better one will come, a more accurate will come around. So eventually, it is the liability, responsibility of that. For example, right, if Dr. Ho were to rely on certain AI software to make a diagnosis, what happened is wrong? Who is responsible? The AI developer or the manufacturer or the regulator who approved it or Dr. Ho's hospital or she herself? So there are many questions that are still confronting. For example, EU, they have ethical principles been established and FDA as well, but there are still many loopholes that we humans, we can't really take care of that. Now imagine the aim of AIs at intelligence, human intelligence, to us, we don't even understand how our thought process, how we think, and let alone where we let a machine continue to learn by itself, like going wild, and we really can't control or regulate that. So that is the danger that I often caution the researchers, the doctors out there, or the members of the public. We need to spend more time to think about that, involve more people in that, not only scientists, doctors, but ethicists, philosophers, and lay people as well.
All the stakeholders. So if you look at the Radiological Society of North America's 2020 recent Congress, you will find that there is this committee being set up or working group to look at the ethics, because this is a real major issue. When we are learning on patient data, we actually can't really de-identify it as well as we think we can do, because the computers are so good, they can read the metadata. So how do you remove the metadata when it is training? Who owns the data in the first place when you contribute to this pool? And then, of course, like Prof. Lin said, the problem with when errors come up, who is in charge? Who is responsible, right? So to me, the buck ends with whoever is signing the report, right? So which is why I said you cannot rely on AI blindly. That will lead to major issues. So AI is very helpful more in, I would use AI much, much more in all those areas which eases workflow, which reduces errors. So we don't want a MAX 737 situation where, you know, they investigated it and it was very dangerous, people died. We can't have this in medicine because we are very low risk for tolerance. We hope we are a high reliability organization, but actually the airline industry is higher reliability than medicine because medicine has so many complexities introduced into it. But yeah, I would like to see AI in areas where these ethical issues do not come so much into play, where we can apply it earlier rather than later, because sorting out this ethics is not straightforward, and sorting out the AI errors that arise, all these issues that arise, the legalities of it. In fact, whatever they're studying on may be only useful for people of a certain population. How are you going to be able to apply it across the whole wide world?
Yeah, learning, feeding it as much data as possible, as much representative data as possible, right? But Prof. Ng, if you say that, you know, these are questions that we're still grappling with, and yet AI technology and AI devices are being introduced or they're being tested, if the regulatory environment is still so murky, how do we move forward? Who's regulating what? In the US, if I understand it, AI devices don't require FDA approval. Is that right?
If it's used like as a medical device, we use in regarding with diagnosis or monitoring or therapy, it is under the FDA. For example, a couple of simple, relatively simple from AI context, the segmentation to identify certain tumors, they have received FDA approval. But this is just from a technical point of view. But as the bigger usage in terms of relying on it for diagnosis, and that hasn't been sorted out yet. So there are a lot of thinking, and basically we need to assemble all the stakeholders to talk about it, particularly to the lay people. They must get involved. Don't just leave it to the scientists or doctors. And I believe there are a lot of submits, a lot of panel discussion are ongoing. Besides that, I think EU have, the different countries have come up with various so-called guidelines as to its usage, and we are on the right path towards the fully implementation of AI in medicine.
What about in Malaysia? Are we making any efforts to look at this space, to understand what needs to be regulated?
Well, if it's a medical device to be under the Ministry of Health, I haven't come across any serious attempts to look into the regulation of it. Probably we are quite busy occupying ourselves with other more pressing issues. We have this communicable diseases and all the basic public health issues. But in terms of academic, they still we do have conferences by various societies, the computer science community, the medical, in different specialties in medicine. They do have lots of discussions, invited talks on those. So we are gearing up for that. We are really trying to build up the momentum of getting more evidence towards eventually, hopefully, the Ministry of Health will convene a meeting where different stakeholders will come together. We can see how Malaysia can move forward in implementing AI in medicine.
So that's the broader picture. But if you look at some of the software we have installed in our, you know, equipment, there is some features which can you can bother on calling it AI if you like. And the vendors like to say that it is AI. And definitely the medical devices authority does have to, you know, certify that it's okay for us to use it. Did you do need to get it passed by them? So there are already certain features which are implemented in our equipment. Like I said, these are not the ones where they say, I'm going to diagnose cancer on behalf of the radiologist. We are not looking at that one. I think there is a lot more features, a lot more ethics involved. And exactly how is it going to be applied? And then what happens when you sign off and you use AI? And in case of USA, it's always about reimbursement. Because all these extra features cost a lot of money. So if you integrate it into your software, for example, the existing PACS, we have the picture archiving system and our reporting system, plus the electronic medical records. If we were to implement an AI program that is not going to be proprietary to only one type of electronic medical records, then how the AI uses it to, say, channel and triage cases for you, tell you which are the important ones, who are the ones who needs to be read immediately because we see something significant in it. I think that one would be where Prof. Ng's comments are going to definitely affect. It's definitely very important. But if for little things in our software for our machine to make things better, like for example, to reduce movement, to improve the enhancement of what we see, the synthetic images that they get from a mammogram that is taken by the 3D method, they no longer need to have a 2D mammogram. It is a FDA's approved 3D tomosynthesis for even screening mammograms. And from there, they synthesize the 2D images. Although it's not officially called AI, you can say that that requires quite a high degree of computing and intelligent power, I would say. Quite an intelligent power to put things together and then enhance things for us. So little increments of that nature, of course, goes through the MDA as usual. But I'm looking forward to bigger areas in which they can help us. Simple things like if we do an X-ray, are we doing it on the right person? I think there was a couple of years ago a report where someone operated on the kidney of a very healthy patient and removed it because the CT scan of another patient was ascribed to this patient and therefore he was told he had kidney cancer and had to have it removed. Things like these still do happen, very rare, but it can happen. And this is where we want AI to help us reduce errors.
But, you know, we have a problem even with standardizing electronic medical records across our hospitals, our healthcare system, our whole healthcare system. How do you think that's going to affect the ability to feed all these data and to make AI a reality?
So you bring out a real problem we have been confronting for years. We need standardization. However, because of the commercial interest, various developer vendor, their diverse interest, and we're still not there yet. For example, the date has caused a lot of problem. In America, it's month, day, and year. And here we have day, month, and year. And often, you know, even in our computer systems, in the hospital, CT scan, you look at 7/12. We don't know if 7 December or July 12.
Yeah.
And this has caused a lot of headache when we go into a common system. This is an example. That's why we have organizations such as HL7 and many other standards been in place. Hopefully, all vendors will put the patient interest and safety first to comply with this international set of standards. Same thing with AI. Now we are trying to build up a database whole wide world so that we can improve the accuracy using deep learning where they learn by itself, unsupervised. So we need to standardize the images of certain contrast, certain noise level. And various organizations, RSNA, AAPM, are working very hard towards that. And it is a work in progress. And hopefully, this is the basic, the fundamental technical aspect that we can handle. We can overcome that, then can move forward to much more rapid progress.
What is HL7?
Health Level 7. Yeah, it is with the organization set up various standards in terms of the categories like patient's demographic, the name, the year, and the profile, and so on.
There are levels to that also, right, Prof?
Yeah, different.
Because I listened to an informatics thing on that, you know.
Yeah.
And it is actually far more complex than we think. But these are just, you know, these are the technical issues which they need to sort out. But that's why I told you they are always going on the low-hanging fruits, like diagnosing lung cancer, diagnosing breast cancer. Those are all low-hanging fruits. The difficult things are the ones they have not sorted out. So if you go to any of these conferences and attend the AI and the informatics tracks, then you realize we are very far from it. We don't even have the infrastructure and the background for this to scale up when the time comes. So why are we talking so much about replacing the radiologists right now? Let's try to, you know, like what Prof. Ng said, can't even standardize the dates. And it does pose a problem, right? Because I do have this problem. I said, now, is this one referred? It's easy if it's a 30 or a 28, you know, or then the month, you know, cannot be 30. So, okay, this is the other way around. But I do see images from all over Malaysia, which are on different date settings. And then I have to try and figure out myself, you know, which part of the month. Fortunately, if we can look at the year, that's the best. I hope none of them are putting the year first because it's 20, so it can still be a date.
Yes.
And this is one of the causes of errors in medicine, really, this date. And also units of measurement. Most are SI, sometimes they use the imperial system. And these are real, real issues that we must tackle.
It's interesting, Dr. Evelyn, that you describe something like diagnosing lung cancer as a low-hanging fruit, when in fact, I guess for the layperson, that sounds like you really achieved the pinnacle of AI, when in fact, there are so many other more, it's in tiny details that we haven't fixed the problems yet. For us, we get excited, as you said, with the sexy headlines about an AI that can learn and be able to deliver the best diagnosis. But if I could get each of you to sum up, what would you like us to understand about AI in medicine?
I would like to end with a rather philosophical thought of that. We know about the saying, to err is human. As humans, we make mistakes. So if it's trying to get rid of the human intelligence, be replaced by artificial intelligence, hopefully there'll be less error. But then if we have less errors, then we are no longer humans. It's like tautology in a way. We need to really understand, we not try to put human against the AI, like Dr. Ho mentioned, oh, they will replace radiologists or others, but we should look forward to humans working together with AI hand in hand, and that for the common good of the patients and the members of public.
So following on with Prof Ng's comments, this is what is meant by augmented intelligence. It is human augmented intelligence. We are, after all, in the practice of medicine, and it's a very human relationship. Really, it's all about dealing with humans, and you want to put humanity back into it. You want to put compassion, empathy. Then, although they are teaching robots to be empathetic, it is still not the same. So I'm looking forward to partnering with AI so that I can put more of time back with the patient. If it is to talk to the patient about their images and their findings, and I can enhance the clinical doctor's diagnosis and management of the patient. I think at the end of the day, we are not just talking about diagnosis, we are talking always about management of the patient. And imaging studies are purely to help manage patients. This is where our role is. And we are part of this huge team of people who help patients. And if we can put that help, that patient back into our core, and this is where I see artificial intelligence partnering with it and augmenting it. I really look forward to this space of AI.
If you look into your crystal ball, will you see it in your professional lifetime, do you think?
Well, since I'm contemplating retirement, may or may not see it, but I think in the next decade, we should be able to see something.
That's very soon.
We should be able to see something, but it's because we are already seeing little increments of it. We'll be seeing more of it in the next few years. And if all the governments of the world get together and the bodies get together on the ethics of all this, and the stakeholders, which means the patients are part of the stakeholders, they have to be in on it, and how data is going to be used, gathered from them anyway.
What do you think,
Prof? Learn from them. Yeah,
it's hard to predict anything can happen in the next decade or so. It basically boils down to the human nature. How we want for AI to achieve, to make our life better, to make the world a better place to live, or it's just for the ulterior motive of making things cheaper, better, or more accurate, and regardless of the common good of mankind, then we might be heading for disaster. Already, AI has been used for military purpose. Yeah, very scary military and for criminal purpose. It is really a very scary scenario. We must put an act together, must get the ethics and regulation in place quickly before the technology goes beyond our human control.
I need to quickly add in that they have actually done a study where they could change the data in the images so that you will make a wrong diagnosis. They have actually tested, and they can reverse engineer and they can hack in and do that. So with AI, which means a digitalization of the highest degree, right? Our security has to be super good. And recently they just studied that quite a lot of organizations, they could hack in and do something to their images. And because they therefore need to really up the security level.
Because you have
because
so
this
much
is really
data.
Dangerous if they can make your chest X-ray abnormal.
Yeah.
Imagine how much damage they can do. So it's always a double-edged sword. Nothing comes free.
But thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Professor Ng Kwan Hong, medical physicist and professor at the Department of Biomedical Imaging at University of Malaya, as well as Dr. Evelyn Ho, consultant clinical radiologist. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.